Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. The debate in Washington and in New York City is in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, looking back on that disaster, and in particular looking at the very awkward and unsatisfactory evacuation plans. The United States House of Representatives is seriously taking up legislation that would require all states to include evacuation plans for pets and animals along with human beings. The New York City Public Transit Authority is looking at similar policies, looking at how to allow persons to bring their pets in case of natural or human disaster on the buses and in the subway systems of New York City. The mayor of New York says it's nonsense, and I am with him. This is one of the most ridiculous things I've heard in a long time, and it becomes a parable of the kind of confusion we experience in this age. Let me make a quick argument. When you confuse the status of a human being and the status of an animal, whether it's a pet or companion animal or whatever you want to call it, when you confuse those two, you are headed towards a moral catastrophe. We were unable to evacuate all the human beings from New Orleans, and now we're supposed to allow dogs and cats and whatnot on the evacuation buses and trams and in the boats and the helicopters and all the rest? This is a great topic for our conversation today. How should we as Christians think through our obligations, even concerning our pets, our obligations to the human beings around us? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. And we'll get to your questions and comments and to this discussion in just a moment. First, a review of some of the other issues in the news. The movie The Da Vinci Code continues to dominate at the box office. And the Los Angeles Times reports over the weekend that scores of products are being linked to the success of the movie. Now, that's hardly surprising. If you go in the local bookstore or virtually any kind of major retail outlet, you'll see something tied to the Da Vinci Code. But I found very interesting that reporter Louis Sahagan had an interesting admission in his article from the deputy publisher at Harper's San Francisco. Said this, a month ago on the day the Da Vinci Code was released in paperback, Harper's San Francisco published Michael Beignet's The Jesus Papers, exposing the greatest cover-up in history, which suggests that Jesus was anesthetized by friends to numb the pain of crucifixion, then went on to raise a family with Mary Magdalene. Quote, we wanted the Jesus Papers to be out before Easter and then carry the book through the advent of the film The Da Vinci Code, said Harper deputy publisher Mark Tauber. It's a business move. This is when the media is talking about it, when readers are interested in it, and when the movie is being released, end quote. Well, that is one of the most fascinating admissions I have seen in print in a long time, because here, deputy publisher Mark Tauber of Harper's San Francisco says, look, it's just about the money. The argument that Jesus was anesthetized by his disciples and never really died and then married Mary Magdalene and all the rest, that is considered just fair game if there's a buck to be made. You know, no publisher's responsibility to the truth, no accountability to the facts. And by the way, the Jesus Papers is not written, as was the Da Vinci Code, as sort of a pseudo-novel, a novel that claims to reveal facts. No, instead, the Jesus Papers is presented as supposedly factual, even though there's not one shred of historical evidence for it. Meanwhile, reporter Sahagan also reports that Vishal Mangalawadi is scheduled to speak at the Hollywood Presbyterian Church, and here's the title of his lecture, Sexual Mysticism, The Da Vinci Code and Beyond, end quote. Now, when I saw that, I was rather alarmed. First of all, why would the Hollywood Presbyterian Church invite someone to give a lecture by that title? And then I started looking at who this guy is and what he's about. There's good news here. He is one who has actually participated in the Libri program in Europe, a convictional Christian, and he's here talking about how some of the pagan religions of the world actually do celebrate sexual mysticism. That's something important to know. But here's my favorite part of Sahagan's article. You're going to love this. And I quote, Carrie Carter of Fenton, Michigan, is among those compelled to speak up with the movie's release. She's a self-described spirit medium and said a special source told her the time is right to spread the good news. Quote, the Da Vinci Code will change our future. The angels told me the Da Vinci Code will rock this world. They said it will make people look inside themselves and start to question things, said Carter, adding that she also has channeled Mary Magdalene. Quote, the angels also told me this is only the start of a great awakening. There will be more books and more movies, she added. I may write a book myself, or maybe lecture. End quote. Well, we'll consider ourselves on notice for that. Meanwhile, looking to Great Britain, interesting report in The Telegraph. It's one of the major London newspapers. It seems that evangelical college and university students in Britain are set to attend sessions on keeping their virginity. These are Christian young people in colleges and universities in Britain. The paper's coverage implies that sexual virginity and sexual abstinence among the young is nothing less than exotic, and it's apparently a newsworthy development. Let me quote from the article. An evangelical group worried that Christian students are under enormous pressure to lose their virginity has devised a 6-week course to help give them the moral strength to resist. The course, called Pure, is to be launched nationwide in the autumn after being piloted on 15 campuses. Thousands of students are expected to flock to the sessions, which will arm them with biblical texts to help them ward off evil thoughts in a culture where promiscuity is rife. Here's another section of the article. James Myring, a second-year medicine student at Sheffield University who has attended the course, said, Freshers, that's freshmen, week is all about who can have the most sex. But as a Christian, I don't want to have sex with a girl until I'm married. Now I'm in a relationship, and I encourage my girlfriend not to wear very showy clothes, like low-cut tops, bare midriffs, and short skirts, because I find it very attractive. I'm not going to say it's easy. My natural instinct is that, as a red-blooded 21-year-old boy, of course I want to have sex. But when you have a relationship right, sex is saved for marriage because it's just for one person. End quote. Well, hats off to one young man who knows what his natural instinct is and yet knows that he's accountable to God for his sex life and that God is something better for him than premarital sex. I just find this article very interesting because here's a major newspaper that, with a very unembarrassed approach, simply says these people are exotic. They're strange. These evangelicals who, number one, intend to delay sex until marriage, and number two, are actually putting together courses to help young people do that, are very strange people. In California, a lot of the attention is directed towards the bill that will require the state public schools to, in the curriculum, inculcate very positive messages about homosexuality at every level, from kindergarten through the 12th grade. Section 1 of the bill, which is Senate Bill 1437, says no teacher shall give instruction nor shall a school district sponsor any activity that reflects adversely upon persons because of their race or ethnicity, gender, disability, nationality, sexual orientation, or religion. Going further, the bill says no textbook or other instructional materials shall be adopted for use in the public schools that contains any matter reflecting adversely upon persons because of their race or ethnicity, gender, disability, nationality, sexual orientation, or religion. This is bizarre stuff, and it's just a reminder of what's at stake in the public schools. This is an impossible situation, by the way. How are you going to write a history book now that perfectly fulfills this? Because the argument is, if someone is supposedly gay or was claimed to be gay and you don't say he's gay, by the fact you don't say he's gay, you're reflecting adversely upon gay persons because you're implying that it would be embarrassing to be gay. The only way to eventually accomplish this is for the textbook writers to just declare everyone gay. And then, of course, that would be an insult as well. Because if everyone is, then no one's special. Al Gore's out with a very special documentary. It's entitled An Inconvenient Truth, and it hits the cinemas tomorrow. And, well, it will speak for itself, but let's listen to the former vice president speak for it.
If you look at the 10 hottest years ever measured, they've all occurred in the last 14 years. And the hottest of all was 2005. Scientific consensus is that we are causing global warming. I am Al Gore. I used to be the next president of the United States of America. This is Patagonia, 75 years ago, and the same glacier today. This is Mount Kilimanjaro, 30 years ago, and last year. Within the decade, there will be no more snows of Kilimanjaro.
This is really not a political issue so much as a moral issue. Temperature increases are taking place all over the world,
and that's causing stronger storms.
This is the biggest crisis in the history of this country.
Early this morning, Hurricane Katrina slammed into New Orleans.
Is it possible that we should prepare against other threats besides terrorists?
Well, I'm sure the answer to that question, Mr. Vice President, is yes. But, you know, here's where I want to come in and say, as a Christian trying to think intelligently about this, I'm not sure I can declare myself on the evidence on one side or the other. I can say that I'm alarmed by the alarmist rhetoric. I'm alarmed by the fact that these eco-analysts have been on both sides of this issue within the last couple of decades or so. But the bigger concern I have here is that those pressing this agenda are certain that human beings have done this and that we can change it. Well, how? John Tierney in the New York Times says that this approach would have a lot more credibility if they would point towards sources of energy that are available and could solve the problem, like nuclear power. But they're not about to do that. Folks, when we come back, we're going to be talking about animal rights, specifically about whether we have the obligation to evacuate pets along with people in a time of trouble. The phone number is 877-893-8255. And we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Well, the legislation has now passed through the House of Representatives, passing today by a vote of over 300 to just about 24. I mean, this is a landslide victory for legislation, and it's about requiring the states in their emergency preparedness plans to include preparations to evacuate animals, pets in particular, as well as human beings. And when I hear about this, I have to tell you, I just have to scratch my head and wonder what in the world is going on in this country. Let's just think back to Hurricane Katrina and its aftermath this past summer. What took place? Number one, we couldn't get the people out. There were persons who were stranded. They had to be evacuated by helicopters, and they were stranded on rooftops and in attics of homes, and it took John boats and rescue. It took the Marines, folks. I mean, we're talking the National Guard, the Marines, the Coast Guard. We're talking about neighbors getting out in their boats and saving their neighbors. And now, along comes this report that the animals are going to have to be included as well. Let me read to you from the Washington Post. You need to hear this. Quote, a television shot of a little boy losing his dog during Katrina rescue operations was the catalyst for a House vote on legislation requiring pets to be considered in future emergency preparedness plans. Quote, the dog was taken away from this little boy, and to watch his face was a singularly revealing and tragic experience, said Representative Tom Lantos, Democrat of California, sponsor of the Pet Evacuation and Transportation Standards Act. Okay, let me just put it, I got to stop myself here. When a nation adopts a law known as the Pet Evacuation and Transportation Standards Act, civilization is crumbling. I just make that as a dogmatic statement. When the House of Representatives is seriously considering a bill with this title, oh, mercy. Let me go back to the story. This legislation was born in that moment, said Representative Tom Lantos, speaking of the moment when he saw the little boy losing his dog during the Katrina rescue operations. Reading again from the Washington Post, the House was to vote late Monday on the bill, which requires that state and local preparedness officials take into account pet owners, household pets, and service animals when drawing up evacuation plans. Offices that failed to do so would not qualify for grants from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, period. Okay. So in the aftermath of a massive disaster, when human beings are in peril, when the boats go to the people on the housetops, they are supposed to take the dogs and the cats with them? Just think of the chaos that would represent. Just think, number one, they're taking up space where a human being could be, but also think of the management problem. Who wants to be on an escape bus filled with nervous dogs? Just think of the sanitation issues involved here. Ladies and gentlemen, I just cannot believe this is going on. It is a fatal confusion, I believe, a very dangerous and threatening confusion of human beings and other animals. It is the insinuation that our responsibility to pets and to other animals is to put other human beings at risk in order to save our companion animals. And by the way, that is the new politically correct phrase. It's not pet, because pet implies ownership, which implies hierarchy. Drag with me here. Now we're supposed to say companion animals. These are animals who are our friends. They're our companions, and they live with us. Now, if you want to get sentimental about pets, you come to the right place. I grew up with dogs and cats. I am the very proud companion. Let's just get the term right. To a beagle who is a dear, dear friend. He is a deluded beagle because he just absolutely thinks that everything I do is great. And every one of us needs at least one little critter who thinks that of us. Now, I wouldn't want anything bad to happen to Baxter. As a matter of fact, If I had any opportunity to relieve him from flood or any other peril, you know I would do it. But not if it meant that I would be putting someone else at risk in a time of dire emergency evacuation. Now, a similar policy has been proposed in New York City by the transit authority there, but I'm glad to say Mayor Bloomberg has simply stepped in to say, this is nonsense. This can't happen. We're supposed to have, and think of all the hundreds and thousands of dogs in New York. We're supposed to have people bringing their dogs on the subways in New York when they're crowded with people trying to get away from a disaster? That's a disaster. At least the mayor has the sense to know that. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Let's talk about how Christians should think about this. Number one, how should we think about pets? And boy, this raises a host of issues, doesn't it? We live in a country that spends more on pet food than most other countries have just in terms of food to feed human beings. We have stores, mega stores for pet needs because our pets have become an extension of our own personality. It's consumerism now extended to our pets, who now can have famous label accoutrements, feeding bowls, clothes, leashes, and all the rest. The phone number, 877-893-8255. Should we rescue Fido along with his owner or companion? Now, by the way, there are rules that go along with this. And, of course, if bureaucracy is going to be involved in a policy, they're going to have to come up with rules. So it says no exotic pets. Well, that's speciesist, isn't it? I think that's speciesist. I mean, what about the person whose best friend is a snake or an iguana? And who defines exotic? How about the guy that shows up with his aquarium? Let's go to Chris calling from Ocala, Florida, listening on XM Satellite Radio 170. Go ahead, Chris.
Yes, I just think that it's, I happen to have dogs and horses, and in order for us to take our horses to a show or an event that takes us out of the state of Florida, we have to have a paper called a Coggins that shows that our horse is free of disease. It would be very difficult and unfeasible. Everybody would have to have a crate to ship their dog or cat. That would take up more room. They would have to make sure that they had the papers that their animals have no rabies or no feline leukemia. And so for them to even put this in the house, this is insane. We couldn't move our elderly out of the nursing homes fast enough. I love my animals dearly, but I would not expect them to take the place of a human. So when they tell you to evacuate, and if we feel a storm is hitting in the Ocala area, we put our horses in the horse trailer. We can put our dogs in the truck and our cats, and I even have exotic birds. And we take them with the appropriate papers. The people in New Orleans didn't have money to get out of a federal food stamp program, let alone to have all this documentation and expect the rescue people to take care of them.
Well, Chris, I appreciate your call. I have to tell you, the sentimentality of human beings with pets is a big part of this. It's in the argument from Representative Tom Lantos of California, the sponsor of, and here's the name of the bill again, the Pet Evacuation and Transportation Standards Act. He says that it all began when he saw a dog taken away from a little boy during the Katrina rescue operation. Well, you know, let me tell you something. If you were to see this little boy get appendicitis, and you were to see this little boy taken to the emergency room, and you were to see this little boy taken into the emergency room, and you were to see a surgeon take out a scalpel and open his flesh and take out that appendix, you would say, boy, that's violence. But it's for a good purpose, is to save the little boy's life. No one would wish for that little boy to have to undergo that kind of surgery and that kind of physical trauma. But you would know that it was necessary under the circumstance. Well, no one wants to see a boy have a little dog taken out of his arms. But you know what? An adult has to show up and say, that's what we're going to have to do. And I think that's what's missing here. What I want to know is, why would a bunch of adult legislators seriously bring a bill that I think is going to shut down emergency preparedness? Or better yet, I think this is what's going to happen. I think these government agencies are going to come up with plans they don't ever intend to follow. I think they're going to file nonsense with Washington in order to get the FEMA grants, because I guarantee you, when actually push comes to shove, some kind of sanity is going to come out of this. We have to hope so. The phone number, 877-893-8255. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. I am sincerely surprised by this. The House of Representatives passing something known as the Pet Evacuation and Transportation Standards Act. I say this as a pet owner, a proud and very affectionate pet owner. But I just can't imagine that when we think about the actual mechanics of an evacuation during a time of disaster, that we would require the states to come up with plans to allow persons to bring their pets with them. I just cannot imagine this. Everything from the danger the pets would pose to the space they would take up to the sanitation problems involved in shelters and transportation and all the rest. This is frankly just shocking to me. It's hard for me to believe that the U.S. House would actually do this. And we'll see what happens when a similar bill is to be taken up in the Senate. I mean, after all, this didn't pass by a close vote. It was overwhelming. A fact of feel-good legislation, I believe. Now, Christians have to confirm that animals are created by God and reflect His glory. In other words, as an important part of creation, the animal world bears the glory of God and reflects that glory. And we see God's glory in the creation of the plenitude of the animals in all their different form. And we have a stewardship responsibility. But we also have a responsibility to know the difference between human beings and the animals. All right, let's go to Stacy calling from Louisville, Kentucky, calling on WFIA. Go ahead, Stacy.
Yeah, hi. I do believe that people are different than animals, but I also believe that most, quote, pets are updated on their shots. And these, as you call them, companions are dependent on their owners to keep them safe. They could sit on the floor in front of their owner or in their laps on the bus. And I also believe that because of what happened at Katrina, FEMA can always help for taking care of the pet, you know, for food-wise and wherever they decide to take them to. But I honestly believe that when you take in a pet, you are taking in a responsibility of a life form.
Okay, now I'm going to let you make that argument, Stacey. Let me ask the question. What if you are a rancher and you've got a lot of cattle? What about all the cattle? Does he bring them as well?
Well, that's a good question. Are they all updated on their shots?
Well, let's assume they are. I mean, the point is, do we owe this obligation to all the animals?
Well, I think you have to depend on I guess that would be a fine line. I think what you're talking about, though, is more of farmers that are using these animals for their way of life. And of course, you wouldn't be able to get them on a bus, and you would have to have proper trailering for these animals to be able to get them to safety.
Yeah. Well, let me just ask you, Stacey, in a time when you know it's urgent, I mean, we had human beings trapped. And I want to let you make the argument. You would argue that it's not a problem to give attention to animals when there are human beings in dire need?
Well, I honestly believe that human beings do come first. Yes,
okay.
I honestly believe that. But if you have a person standing on top of a roof trying to get help and their dog is right next to them, take them both.
Okay, and I understand the argument there. I love my beagle. I just have a hard time imagining what you do in a shelter with a lot of people and the risk of infectious disease and all the rest when you add animals, companion animals or pets to that mix. I really do appreciate your call, Stacey. Thanks for calling. And I'm thankful that you got the principle very clearly articulated there that human beings have to come first. That's a good place to begin thinking through this issue. Okay, let's go to Cindy calling from New Albany, Indiana, also listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Cindy.
Hi, my name's Cindy, and I happen to have four English Mastiffs, and for those who aren't aware of the breed, they're very, very large dogs. I would like to know the people that voted for this bill, if they would be willing to give up their seat, their children's seat, their parents' seat, so I can bring my dog onto the boat that can only seat so many people.
Cindy, bless your heart. I have to tell you, if you show up with four Mastiffs, I'm not going to be able to argue with you. But I really appreciate your attitude, because what you're saying is you wouldn't want someone to give up their kid seats for your dogs. Isn't that right?
I love my dogs to death. They stay in the house. They're my companions. But, no, I would not want anyone to go without a seat so I could save my dogs. We are clearly to take care of these animals, but we are superior. God states that, and we have to make wise decisions.
I appreciate the calls, and the call for you to join, the number for you to join is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. You know, in New York City, this policy proposal is already running into some practicalities, and that's the mayor's point. How in the world are we going to make this happen? What happens when all these animals are in the subway? And who's going to have time during this emergency to make sure they've got their papers and their leashes and their muzzles and their cages and all the rest? Give me a call, 877-893-8255. I'm Albert Moeller. Welcome back to the Albert Moeller program. Clearly, we have struck a nerve here when it comes to the new policy established by the U.S. House of Representatives, inculcated in legislation that says, according to the, and here's the name of the law, you got to hear it again, Pet Evacuation and Transportation Standards Act, that passed overwhelmingly in the House of Representatives. According to this, in order to get FEMA grants, the states are going to have plans to evacuate pets as well as human beings. All right. Nonsense, I say. Let's go to David calling from Charleston, South Carolina, listening on XM170. Go ahead, David.
Hey, Dr. Moeller. Isn't this just indicative of the outcropping, the lack of leadership that we have nationwide to make the difficult decisions and the decisions they know that are ultimately beneficial and should be made? And if you could please touch on just where in Scripture, from a prioritization standpoint, where animals are versus human beings.
Yeah, two good questions. David, I think you're exactly right. That's why earlier I referred to this bill as feel-good legislation. I think that's what it is. I think it's about emotion rather than about cold, hard, reasonable, rational logic. I don't think, by the way, that if these persons actually had to make decisions, I think Cindy, our caller from Indiana, made this point very well, that if these people actually had to make decisions based upon real-life situations, I don't think they would act in accordance with their own legislation or with the logic of it. At least I hope not. David asked a question about biblical passages that indicate the prioritization between humans and animals. And, of course, the classic of this is Genesis 1. In this, we read, beginning at verse 27, God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created him. Now, that passage tells us is that there is one species made in God's image, and that's the human being, male and female, both made in the image of God. And then in verse 28, we read, God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over every living thing that moves on the earth. Then God said, behold, I've given you every plant yielding seed that is on the surface of the earth, and every tree which has fruit yielding seed, it shall be fruit for you. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the sky, and to everything that moves on the earth, which is life, I have given every green plant for food, and it was so. Now, what's important about that is that there's actually there a triple prioritization. And it's very important to understand that at the bottom of this prioritization are the vegetables. The vegetable matter is given to both animals and human beings for their needs. And so that is a very clear indication. It is good for us to eat that which is given to us in plants and in trees and fruit and all the rest. And then there is another prioritization, and that is between the animals and the humans, where the human beings made in the image of God and singularly made in the image of God are given the responsibility to rule over all the other living things, the fish of the sea, the birds of the sky, and every living thing that moves on the earth. And so that is before the fall. So here, before the fall, animals which have life and some level of consciousness but are not made in the image of God are put in a different category than human beings who are made in God's image. Now, what does the image of God mean in this case? Well, most specifically, I would argue that it means that human beings alone are capable of knowing God, having a relationship with the Creator, and coming to know that we were made in order to reflect the glory of God. The animals reflect the glory of God, but they do not consciously do so. And there's a whole issue of moral consciousness and all the rest that separates human beings from the animals. And to get this wrong is just to go so off base. It's to get the whole picture of reality so wrong that the implications become truly horrific. For instance, you have Peter Singer and others, the professor of bioethics at Princeton University, who argues that, for instance, a really, really smart chimp may be smarter and thus more worthy of life than a really, really mentally incapacitated human. And, you know, you just start thinking about that sliding scale, and we're really in big trouble. All right, let's go to Curtis, calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Curtis.
I just had the statement that it's unfortunate, but this idea and this policy isn't the first time the U.S. isn't the only people who have carried out this type of thing. I just finished the autobiography on the gentleman who ran the hotel in Rwanda where he kept refugees, and he mentioned that when the foreign dignitaries and others were airlifted out of Rwanda before the genocide began in 1994, their pets were able to go along with them. And so it's not the U.S. isn't the first one to follow suit with this, but it is very unfortunate. And I was wondering if you knew of any other things similar to that.
You know, I don't really know of other things like that, although I'm sure they've happened. But, Curtis, I really appreciate your call because it reminds me of two things. First of all, the Hotel Rwanda story is one of the saddest I have ever known, read, or seen. And just think about this. The very fact that it was put in the record, and now that Curtis has reflected it, that these foreign dignitaries put their animals before their pets, before other human beings, the very fact that that is notorious ought to tell us something. In other words, our moral abhorrence at the idea of confusing the rights of animals and the rights of human beings here, or the value of the two, tells us something. The other thing is, I can't think of anything quite like that. I can think of, though, the big picture that comes when I'm humiliated as a Christian to think about why we as a nation would, for instance, have celebrities who would leave their estates to their pets and would create multi-thousand-dollar air-conditioned doghouses and all the rest. Well, there are people around the world who have nothing. I mean, clearly we've become something of a lampooned cartoon of our values there. Thanks for your call, Curtis. Let's go to Junior calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Junior.
Hey, Dr. Moeller. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, what about those of us who suffer from allergies to animals? Like, I have an allergy to cats. If I'm around a cat for more than an hour or so, my eyes swell up. I have asthma. My asthma acts up. I mean, you were talking about life and death there, and these people are saying that their pets are more important than my life and other people out there who suffer from the same problem.
You know, Junior, great call. I'll tell you the truth. I think that the people that are really pushing this legislation probably haven't even thought through some of the issues of tremendous importance, such as that you just raised in terms of allergies toward pets, because it could be catastrophic for some people. And I think they certainly aren't facing, forgive me for saying it, but the basic sanitation issues. I mean, to have a companion animal is to know that they are not without their own challenges. Would you want to be in the Superdome with that many human beings needing a place? No. You wouldn't want to be there. You would be there only in an emergency. Would you want to be there with that many human beings and dogs and cats? How do you deal with just issues like feeding and food? How do you deal with issues like who's going to bring the food in? I mean, in a limited space, you know, there are people starving and dying of thirst, and who's going to bring in the dog food? And what about taking care of the sanitation needs? These issues are just huge. You know, to confuse the status of an animal and a human being is to miss something that God has revealed to us directly in creation. We'll be right back with some final thoughts. Coast to Coast, this is the Albert Moeller Program. Well, we got something started here, folks, and I just have to make an observation. The calls were all very interesting. We had two callers we just couldn't get in here at the end. Danny calling from Nashville asking the question, what happens if a dog bites a person? Who's responsible? And Mike calling from Joplin, Missouri, saying that animals are territorial. Who knows what could happen in a confined space? Both, again, very good points, and both rational points. Anyone knowing dogs or cats or other animals immediately recognizes the validity of those concerns. Now, just think about the conversation we've had here where we tried to take a controversial issue and put it into a Christian frame, looking at the fact that we do owe the animal kingdom it's due as reflecting the glory of God. We do recognize them as having a right to exist. We do recognize them, furthermore, as God's good gifts to us. We recognize how they reflect the glory of God, and we also know that Genesis tells us we are to rule over them. And so there's a clear distinction. Human beings made in the image of God and animals, not. They are given the gift of life, but they are also given to us for food, for labor, and yes, for companionship, and for the sheer joy of it. I was talking to one of my students the other day, just taking his kids to the zoo, and I was talking about what a pleasure, you know, these little children had just in being at the zoo. Well, you know, there's something just great about that, especially when a Christian parent can take his kids to the zoo and say, look how much God loves us, that he would create lions and tigers and all these other animals and giraffes and elephants that we get to look at. And we get to see God's incredible, infinite wisdom and sovereignty in creating these animals. But at the same time, we can't overly sentimentalize all of this. And I say that as one who is a pet owner, a companion, who loves the beagle, Baxter, who considers me his good friend. And, you know, just keeping the distinction between human beings and animals is so, so very important. Now, ponder this fact. That legislation passed, and the legislation, of course, here is this Pet Evacuation and Transportation Standards Act. It passed the House of Representatives by a vote of 349 to 24. And you can wonder, why and how does that possibly happen? Well, I think it's because this is the politics of feel-good legislation. No one wanted to vote against this because what will be thrown at them in the next election cycle is that they're against dogs and cats and animals and saving them. But here's the deal. I think when it really comes down to evacuating in an emergency, most human beings still have enough residual common sense that they're not going to confuse a human being with a pet. But when our law is this confused, it's a symptom of a deeper confusion. Thanks for thinking with me today. Get ready tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. Get ready to call 877-893-8255 with your question. Anything's fair game. We'll talk about what's on your mind. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. I'll meet you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.